Monster Man, episode 495, Pahardi and Rome. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through the Arabian Nights-inspired fantasy of Al-Qadim, the setting for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And today, we've got two monsters which are twists on familiar fantastic archetypes. Our first monster is the Pahari. Now, Pahari are basically, they're mermaids. Within the D&D sort of taxonomy, I guess they are water nymphs rather than mermaids. Obviously, those are all kind of adjacent concepts, but for our purposes, they're water spirits. They appear as beautiful women with, you know, fish lower bodies, but they can transform into a human form to walk on land. And it specifically says that their faces are more beautiful than the full moon. And it's that line, more beautiful than the full moon, that links, I think, to the story where these creatures come from, because that's a line from a story about a mermaid in the Arabian Nights. There are several different mer people stories in the Arabian Nights, but one of them, I actually can't find the full moon line. I'm looking at a translation of Julnar the Seaborn and her son, King Badr Basim of Persia. I'm sure that I saw her described as being like the full moon, but I don't see it now. Ah, I was looking at the wrong one. So this is actually a quote from Abdallah the Fisherman and Abdallah the Merman, who says that the mermaids that he sees have faces like moons and hair like women's hair, but their hands and feet were in their bellies and they had tails like fish's tails, which is describing something a little bit different than the more classic mermaid design that we see in the Pahari. But this is the one where the mer people are represented as fish-human hybrids, because in the story that I previously mentioned, the tale of Julnar the Seaborn and her son King Badr Basim of Persia, the mermaid just looks like an ordinary woman. And in fact, in some versions of the story, it's not that they swim underwater, but that they walk on the water. Now, in both of these stories, I think they go underwater, and Julnar has a complex story of how she went from living under the sea to living on land and, you know, winding up in the harem of this king in Khorasan, King Shahriman. But both of the merfolk stories that I just mentioned, Julnar and Abdallah, are both very traditional mermaid stories. So they are like the ones that we've seen previously from other parts of the world. So Abdallah the Fisherman and Abdallah the Merman. Abdallah is a poor fisherman who rescues a merman. So he catches the merman in his net and then lets him go. And the merman agrees, you know, to reward him for his generosity. And he gives him all these things that, like, don't mean anything to him in the undersea world, like coral and pearls and things. Those are all super common down there, so they're not valuable. And this Abdallah uses to pay off his debts to a generous baker. And there's a king in it. But anyway, he goes down and he visits the undersea society. And there's kind of like some mildly satirical elements where, like, they think he's funny and ugly looking because he doesn't have a tail. And, you know, they don't have the concept of money and the sort of other ways in which this fantastic culture is used to satirize land culture. And also, Abdallah the fisherman, that is, has it explained to him by Abdallah the merman, that some of the fish people are Muslims, some of them are Christians, some of them are Jewish, and some of them are other things. This is a theme that's come up several times, this idea that supernatural beings are religiously diverse. We saw it with jinn, where we heard that there were Muslim jinn, and there were Christian jinn, and Jewish jinn, and so on. I don't know why, it just seems to be a recurring thing. I guess the idea is meant to be like, oh, we're just like you, or something like that. But so yes, so these are mer people stories, and the Pahari are mer people, as one might expect. They have very Little Mermaid-like attitudes towards surface dwellers. So it says they regard surface dwellers with a fascination that borders on obsession. They collect things that pertain to life above the waves. Sometimes they will go onto the land. It's not uncommon for a younger Pahari to venture onto land in her human form, if only to spend the day shocking the villagers, who promptly find her some clothes. Because there's a bit in Abdallah the Fisherman and Abdallah the Merman where Abdallah the Fisherman points out that everybody's naked. And Abdallah the Merman goes, oh, where are we supposed to make cloth? We live underwater. And, you know, eating surface food, dancing and singing long into the night before returning home. So I like this idea. Again, these are people that you might have to, like, negotiate with to find some treasure. Like, maybe one of them snuck away with, like, a very important item just because they actually wanted to, you know, have a souvenir of their time on land, but actually turns out to be something that the PCs need. A Pahari could be captured by somebody, or they have magical powers. You get the impression that they are enthusiastic about the service world, but a little naive, so it's possible that one could be, like, misled into helping some bad guy. Again, more populating of a magical world, and less placing opponents in a dungeon. I don't know that these are too different from conventional mermaids. It does sort of make you wonder, you know, the addition of the thing about being curious and interested in interacting with land dwellers is a pretty good idea, because one problem with a lot of these D&D intelligent humanoid species is that they're quite xenophobic and isolationist. So a lot of the time, it's not that they're bad people, but that they don't really want anything to do with you. And so that puts you into the position of either walking away from them or forcing them. I guess if they're like allies that you have to bring out of there, you know, it's kind of a Gondor calls for aid thing, I guess that can happen. But it's nice to have the Pahari like be curious, but maybe not super knowledgeable about land folk. Next up, we have the Rom, a race of subterranean undead giants. They were once these kind of pastoral giant herdsmen, and some kind of like curse or destiny fell upon them where they couldn't have female children. And so eventually they just died out. But because they were so mad at fate that their kind of thirst for, I don't know, revenge on this injustice meant they continued to exist in an undead form. And so their tombs are still dotted around the landscape where they can be found lamenting. And they have a haunting form of music that they can teach you. They are lawful evil, though, so they are actually bad guys, and one could certainly imagine that a giant tomb full of these creatures would be pretty dangerous. So, a race of giant herdsmen called Rom can be found in Ethiopian folklore, and this, like the Hewe and the Debi, comes from publications of the Princeton University expedition to Abyssinia. And the legend of the Rom, the giant people, it also describes them as herdsmen and says that they had giant cows, right? So, and every Rom man, when watering his cows, used to draw the water, and his water vessel was the entire height of a bull. When he ate, he was never satisfied, and he milked his cattle into a vessel made of an elephant's skin and drank it, and he killed one cow for every meal. And when he gathered wood for his fire, he tore the akba tree out with its roots and shoved it into the fire, and so on and so forth. And a man goes out to raid the Rom's cattle, and the Rom are a little confused by him because they don't understand how somebody could be so small, and so on. So it's a very, like, traditional giant story. But there's a second story of how the Rom came to an end, and it's interesting. The idea of not having female children is present here, but it's presented in kind of an interesting way. So listen to this one. While the giants were living on, the time of their end was ripe, and God gave the tribe of the giants the choice of one of these two ways. Shall I now make you perish by a blessing or by a curse? Which do ye wish? And the tribe of the giants said to God, Now then, since thou art to destroy us, let us perish by a blessing. And God said to them, Perish by a blessing then. Your wives shall bring forth male children unto you. Your cows, however, shall all bring forth female calves unto you. And all came to pass as God had spoken. Their wives brought forth only male children, and when they grew up, they found no wives to marry. For the whole tribe had begotten male children only, and all their cows brought forth female calves, and when they grew up, they found no bull to cover them, and they died weak from old age. Then the tribe of the giants assembled to hold a council. What shall we do now? Our sons have found no wives to marry, and they shrivel up in old age, and our offspring has diminished. Thereupon they decided thus, Let every one dig his grave, and put the stones of his tomb together like a hut over it, but let him leave a door in it. Then let him enter through the door with all his property, and close the door. And every one went to his place to do thus, and they did thus. Every one of them dug his grave and built up the stones of his tomb like a hut over it, and left a door to enter by it, and taking whatever he owned in his cows, he entered his grave and closed it. and in this way they all perish at the same time, and their tombs are to be found until this day everywhere, those that have heavy and large stones, but they have left no known village or settlement because they were uncivilized, and roaming herdsmen only. And now, they say as a proverb when the rain grows plentiful beyond measure, O Lord, do not let us perish by blessing, like the giants. And again, as a proverb they say, does a man dig his tomb like the giants? On the contrary, his people bury him. So this is a very interesting story, which exists as kind of like a satirical take on, you know, this idea of perishing by a blessing. So there are lots of societies around the world in which people pray to have a son. And this is just an example of, well, yeah, but if you all got your wish, it would actually be very bad. Similarly, people would prefer to have female cows, because in a society like this one, you want cows so that they can give milk. This is not a society where cattle are being raised primarily for beef. What's important is the milk production. But if everybody had only female calves, then that would be bad. I also think this is, I mean, there's actually a photograph of one of these alleged tombs of the Roman, you know, which is like a big stone structure of some kind. And so this is a bit of a just-so story explaining where these tombs in the landscape came from. But so that's quite cool. I mean, pretty much directly taken from Ethiopian folklore. The idea that the giants are present as undead is not in the Princeton story, but I mean, I guess that makes sense, right? You want to have them still be around. No point in having these giants, particularly if they're so-called uncivilized herders and they, you know, aren't gonna have any treasure other than cows, which a bunch of dead cows probably isn't all that useful. So that's the Rome, a race of undead giants. Pretty cool to have in a D&D game, and I like their folkloric backstory. Okay, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we are continuing through the monsters of the Al-Qadim Monstrous Compendium Appendix. We're going to talk about the Sabu Lords and the Sakina. So I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory @Dice.Camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.